Country.
I walked here alone. Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. If you don't know the band Mipso, you might be downloading their music as soon as the show's over today. They launched their spring tour tonight from Spearfish at the Matthews Opera House. Their sophomore album is called Old Time Reverie, and we've got music from that album for you today. But first, let's meet two of the band members. Jacob Sharp plays mandolin and does vocals. Jacob, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thanks for having us.
And we've also got Joseph Terrell on guitar, also vocals, I take it, Joseph?
That's right, vocals too.
Everybody does harmony in this group, right? Welcome to South Dakota, and welcome to Dakota Midday. Let's get started with some of the things that people have said about your music. You've been called renegade traditionalists, and I'm wondering if you like that term and what it means to you. Jacob, you want to start with that?
Yeah, sure. You know, we do like the term. I think it fits part of our history, which is getting steeped in music collectively and looking back at the traditions of music in North Carolina, but being conscious that we're 20-something-year-old kids who listen to a lot of other stuff growing up, too, and we're not afraid to kind of mix up the ingredients we've got at our disposal.
You're from Chapel Hill. Are you all from North Carolina? Did you meet in college? What are the origins of the group? Joseph, you want to handle that one?
Yeah, that's right. We're all from Chapel Hill. We all met in Chapel Hill, but we're all from different parts of North Carolina. And we met when we were, 18-year-olds, just kind of arriving on campus for the first time. We had our instruments in tow, and we were all getting interested in kind of exploring the traditional music in North Carolina at the same time. And so we accepted the invitation to play an open mic, and then we accepted the invitation to play a kind of barbecue benefit concert. And before we even really knew it, we were being referred to as a band. That's how it started.
Jacob, your sound has evolved on this second album. You added full-time Libby on fiddle. Tell me a little bit about how this album has changed from the first one and how fans are responding to it.
Sure. Well, you know, like Joseph mentioned, we kind of stumbled into being a band. I think our first album, while it's something we're really proud of, is indicative of a band learning how to write together and how to perform and especially how to record. With this one, it seems like we had a bit more of a coalesced identity, and adding Libby certainly helped. She had been a part of the band from the get-go. So pulling her more fully into the fold was only natural and kind of upped our capacity as far as what we thought we were capable of. I would say this one, while the first one was a little more bluegrass-based, this one is maybe a little more old-time oriented. It kind of is within the indie folk scene that a lot of people are understanding now, and yeah, it's been received really well. We've toured the country quite a bit under it. Last year, we'd played about 200 shows in 40-some states, and so it's been exciting to see how it's received all over in different spots.
How has that time on the road and your aggressive touring schedule developed you as musicians and as a group of musicians, Joseph?
Sure. I think there's a kind of tightness that a band can only achieve from playing together day in and day out. You know, it's like the stories you always hear about the Beatles being in Germany when they had that nightclub gig where they're playing like 5 hours a night. I'm not in any way claiming that we're the Beatles, but I understand how that kind of woodshedding day after day can really teach you a lot about music in a way that practicing on your own can't.
Now let's talk a little bit about influences. I know you mentioned, bluegrass. Libby is trained as a classical violinist. Your bass player is a student of jazz. How does all that sort of education, training, influence meld to create a sound that is sort of uniquely yours, Jacob?
That's a great question and something we've pondered a lot, how it is that these differing influences can be brought together with a central point. I think for us it helps not necessarily separate, but establish us as unique within the fold, because there's so much great acoustic music happening right now, and we feel lucky to get to play with bands all the time who just totally inspire us and are doing really cool things within their own world. But we hope that because we come from such different places, and because really we're a little bit less schooled within bluegrass and old time than a lot of our peers, we can offer something a little unique and a little fresh.
Joseph, do you want to talk about songwriting a little bit and how that happens on the road, or what sort of process do you use when you write songs?
Yeah, sure. That's another great example of how our voices combine. We four members of the band into kind of one band identity. Traveling so much, like you mentioned, makes the day-to-day pursuit of songwriting a little bit harder when you're spending as much as 7 or 8 hours a day in a minivan traveling with other people. It's harder to, you know, put the pen to the paper. But I think we probably do what a lot of young songwriters do, maybe every songwriter, which is use technology to help us out. And I think all of us have started using the voice memo function on our iPhones to capture ideas in the early stages and pay attention to that process. And then from then it's just, you know, sitting down and putting the work in to flesh it out into something that seems like a full idea.
So the second album here debuted at number 1 on the Billboard's Bluegrass chart, number 20 on the Folk chart. You've gotten some awards for songwriting and stuff. Talk a little bit about your fan base and how they responded to the second album and how they respond to sort of your live performances, Jacob.
You know, I think in the time between our first and second album, most people who were coming to the band as new listeners knew us as a live band. So they were eager for new material and had heard some of the material on the road in different forms. We've certainly been able to reach a wider audience with this album, and touring and kind of improving the team on the backside of what we do has helped out a lot. And you're right that the Billboard charts that I think brought some new people to us from communities that maybe we hadn't been a part of. And we also played in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade on Thanksgiving of last year, and that one, they told us about 64 million people were watching, so I think that helped a little bit too, and letting people get a taste of what it is that we do. And, you know, we ask people all the time how does they heard about us or if we sit alongside other music they listen to, and we get just as often the response that we're the most bluegrass band they hear or the least, and I think that's probably pretty indicative of having a wide listenership that comes together really just for the songs and for the personality behind them, regardless of maybe the genre that it would be based in.
We're going to listen to a little bit of that music. The song we played coming in out of the break was called Father's House. This one is called Mary Ann.
Around our cake and shut the door. My daddy came from a different world. I knew enough when his lips curled. Nobody visits anymore. I watch the faces.
So the first song, Father's House, had a sort of a soulful kind of melancholy tone to it. This one, especially if you watch the music video, leans a little bit darker and has a little more energy. Joseph, you want to talk about this song and how it sort of came to be part of your group?
Yeah, sure. This one called Mary Ann. It's a song that I wrote. At least I wrote the lyrics and the melody to it. We fleshed it out as a band. And this song, that's interesting, you mentioned this one. This song came from kind of my own personal thoughts about the political situation in North Carolina. A lot of difficult times in terms of race relations, and I was looking back into the history of North Carolina and thinking about how long we've been struggling with this issue. And so it's the story of really an interracial marriage set in the 1970s with a little cameo by LBJ in there somewhere. So it's not as much of a straightforward little folk story as you might expect.
Mm-hmm. And another comment that I hear when I read about your music is that it's thoughtful, that you have a thoughtful sound. Is that an approach, Joseph, that you take to songwriting, is a deep thoughtfulness?
I think songs at their best come from a place where you are dwelling on the process of thinking about something rather than asserting what the answer is. I think for me, at least, a lot of my favorite songs seem like a reflection of that process, and a reflection of all the nuance and uncertainty that come with, you know, contemplating bigger issues rather than simply a statement or an answer. So I'd say, yeah.
And a really strong use of melody throughout. Where does that come from, all four of you together? Or, how hard is it to find sort of melody in, you know, creating your own traditional music, Jacob?
Yeah, I'm happy you mentioned the difficulty, especially within an influence of traditional music, because there's so many proven melodies out there that can kind of inherently inform the ones that we form, or at least I hope they do. We tend to write, we write in different ways. More often than not, it's individually. As Joseph mentioned earlier, maybe it's just a line or a melody. Maybe it's fully fleshed out lyrics, and then they get fleshed out together. And sometimes we co-write and do it as a group. But yeah, I think we all bring a different sense of melody and what it is that we find engaging about the manner in which you can string certain words together, certain notes. And so hopefully the diversity within our songwriting process is another thing that allows a lot of people to feel like these songs are something they can relate to and offer a diversity in it, which is what we hope within a live show and an album.
This is the first time you've been in South Dakota. Have you been inside the Matthews Opera House yet to see where you're playing tonight, Joseph?
We have, yeah. We did a little workshop there with some local musicians, local songwriters. And it's a beautiful little space. It's awesome. And we've never been, I should say, too. We've never been to South Dakota before at all. So yeah, we're just excited to be here.
Jacob, what do you think of the house there? It's kind of a neat place to play.
It's awesome. I mean, South Dakota, we drove up from Denver 2 days ago. So got a full side of the Black Hills kind of as the red carpet entrance in Spearfish. And Spearfish feels like it's a special town with a lot of creative people, and the Opera House certainly feels indicative, or at least to be a focal point of that.
So if you're just joining us, you're listening to band members from the group Mipso. They're going to play tonight at the Matthews in Spearfish. That concert is going to be recorded for a future episode of SDPB Radio's No Cover, No Minimum, that's hosted by Steve Zwemke. And that show airs on Saturday nights at 9 p.m. Central, Sundays at 11 p.m. Central. Joseph and Jacob, any last words? We're gonna end here in a minute with a song called Honeybee. Do you want to set it up?
Honeybee. Honeybee, all the big thoughtful stuff we've been saying, just wipe it off the table. This is just a love song. Enjoy the love song.
Yeah, it has a joy and an energy to it in the love song. We thank you both for your time, Joseph and Jacob.
Thank you.
That is our show for today for Dakota Midday. We hope that it served you. I'd like to thank all our guests, the musicians of Mipso, Vern Halter, Richard Swanson, and Dave O'Hara. Thanks as well to SDPB's Steve Zwemke and Chris Loffrey. Tomorrow, Kara Hetland brings you Innovation. On Monday's Dakota Midday, we talk about violence and death on the Black Hills mining frontier, and the author of Opening Day, the story of Jackie Robinson's first season, joins us. Meet me at noon Central, 11 Mountain. From all of us at South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.
Get up off your knees. We can leave it to me. I'm your honeybee. I've caused my share of cloudy days. I'm sorry for them all. In this restless season, nothing green sprouts, no rainfall. We'll throw these windows open, let the cobwebs see some air. Next time that you call me, I'll be there. So just leave it to me. When you call them, you can't tell the forest from the leaves. Just leave it to me.